This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good morning. It's 9:08 a.m. on Tuesday, the 6th of September. You're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Shazana Mokhtar with Wong Xiaoning and Philip C. Phil, why don't you tell us what's coming up in the next hour on the show?
We have the BBC World Service, and this time you will want to tune in because we're going to go back to the thriving city of Venice, right? A major center of Renaissance, but it's unfortunately now swamped by day trippers who far outnumber overnight visitors and local residents. And you'll see how the city authorities are going to change that by implementing a day tripper tax.
Interesting.
Did you have that, Xiaoning?
No, I went in May, and at that time there was still no day tripper tax, but the locals did complain to me about the sheer number of day trippers. And can you imagine, this is even before tourism has fully opened, right? Mm. And it was already hordes of people there. So I can imagine if you're a local resident, you would find it all very inconvenient. And the other grouse they had was that the day trippers who come into Venice don't really spend any money in the businesses there. So this woman was telling me they bring their own food, they leave their garbage behind, and then they chow after that. So she says it doesn't contribute so much to the local economy. That was one of their complaints.
Hence the tax.
So maybe that tax will make sense. So, you know, listen to the BBC World Service after the 9:30 a.m. news bulletin to hear more about how they plan to roll it out. But in the meantime, let's take a look at the activity on Bursa, Malaysia.
And it's all green this morning. FBM KLCI is up 0.4%, 1,495 points. Singapore Straits Times also in the green. It is up 0.3%, by the way. Fun fact, Deputy Prime Minister of Singapore, Lawrence Wong, is in town. And I think he played the guitar with Tunku Zafro last evening.
I think playing Wonderful Tonight, Eric Clapton.
Maybe. You can catch that picture on
Sleepless
Instagram.
Sleepless nights after that.
Yeah. Meantime, looking at the rest of Asia, Nikkei 225 is up 0.6%, excuse me. Kospi up 0.5%, and the S&P Australia index is up 0.4%. Meanwhile, looking at gold, it is also up 0.6% this morning, $1,720 an ounce. Brent crude, however, down very marginally, down by 0.8% to $95.66 per barrel, maybe on the back of the fact that OPEC Plus is going to raise production by a measly 100,000 barrels a day. Looking at the cryptocurrency space, see Ether gaining strength, $1,670, up 4.5%. Bitcoin this morning up close to 2%, $20,124. Now, if we look at the currency, US dollar against the ringgit, 4.488 pounds.
Wow.
Yes, US dollar is strengthening. And we're going to find out later with Wan Suhaimi, who's the head of economics at Kenanga Investment Bank, as to where the ringgit is actually heading. So do tune in for that. If we look at the pound, 5.2019, and Sing dollar this morning, 3.2034. Value bought on Bursa Malaysia. Wow, public bank, top name. We haven't seen this.
Big caps. Blue chip there.
Exactly. Up 0.4%, 4 ringgit and 69 cents. Top Glove, 82 cents, flat at the moment. New Medic up 0.8% to 65 cents. Heng Yan Refinery also up 0.8% to 4 ringgit 89 cents. And Dagang this morning up 0.6% to 81.5 cents.
I'm kind of surprised I'm not seeing many more oil and gas counters following this upward revision in oil prices, right?
Yes and no, because you would be questioning whether there will be contracts that will go up to the upstream players,
yeah,
right? And yes, oil prices have actually gone up, but there are question marks as to how much the oil majors are really, really going to spend in terms of, let's say, exploration, partially because almost all oil majors are heading into the renewable space.
True, or they're passing dividend to the government.
Yes, but actually Petronas has announced that they're still going to continue with their capex, but maybe just not in the quantums that we used to see in the past.
All right, that's your snapshot of the Bursa at 9:12 this morning. If we look at how U.S. markets closed overnight, well, they were closed. They were celebrating Labor Day, so we don't have any latest figures from the U.S. markets. But we can get some thoughts on where international markets are heading this week. We have on the line with us Peter Lim, Chief Research Officer at Trident Analytics. Peter, good morning. Thanks for joining us today. Now, given this shortened trading week in U.S. financial markets, where do you see equities and treasury yields trending? Is the prevailing investment sentiment still bearish, or has it turned a corner?
I think initially the sentiment was quite optimistic until the Jackson Hole meeting. I think that really, this is Powell's statement really turned the whole thing to to be quite bearish for overall market. That's my take.
I want to get a perspective on currency, because the Chinese yuan dropped to a two-year low against the US dollar last week. What would the effect of a weakening yuan on the currencies for those emerging markets with close trade links to China?
If you look at it, technically, if you look at it, you have to look at between those individual currencies, whether are they strengthening against the Chinese currencies or are they weakening. If you take, for instance, right, if you take Malaysia, for instance, I think like against the Chinese are quite flat. But if you compare, say, for instance, if Chinese to other countries, like, for instance, Thai baht, I mean, technically, Thai baht strengthened against the Chinese currency. But then bear in mind, a weakening Chinese currency is what China needs now for them to actually hit their GDP growth, since for all the lockdown, their economy is slowing down. So a weakening currency is actually good for them.
Okay, but Peter, the question I have with regards to the Chinese economy is that now we see news of another city going into a lockdown, Chengdu, right? And this is almost 60 million Chinese are under some form of lockdown, clearly going to have an impact on the economy. And for Malaysia, China is one of our largest trading partners. What are the repercussions to us then?
Well, I think if you look at it, China, out of ASEAN, right? China is our biggest trading partner. But then bear in mind that if you look at it, ASEAN is always ASEAN's biggest trading partner. I'm not saying there won't be any repercussion. There's always an impact. But what is more important for Malaysia is two things. We look at inter-ASEAN trade and also we look at the domestic consumption. So I think in this time around, our Malaysian domestic consumption will be called as maybe a saving grace for the country.
All right, Peter, and maybe sticking to Chinese economy still, MNCs like Apple, Samsung and Volvo have been moving manufacturing facilities to anywhere but China, part of a trend called friendshoring. What catalysts are driving non-Chinese companies to do this, and is this something that significantly impacts the Chinese economy?
Of course, on one hand, you have China's best friend, US, pushing for this. That's definitely one driving factor. But another factor is, you look at it, right? I think what the pandemic make a lot of people realize is, if you're overly reliant on a single country for production, and wherever there's a shutdown like what we're still seeing now, you actually disrupt the whole supply chain. So that, I think that's also a driver of why all these companies are actually moving offshore of China. And the implication of China is definitely not good for China. Definitely, you actually slow down all the FDIs per se.
And on the flip side, right, let's talk about Chinese companies. I mean, we've seen some good examples of like BYD trying to expand globally, right? With a weaker Chinese yuan, how do you see Chinese companies now as they expand, right? Are they going to double down in their local economy, or are they going to, you know, go beyond Chinese shores?
Definitely, for that direction, is regardless of whether the Chinese currency is weakening or strengthening, I think their decision is more of strategic on the long-term basis rather than on a short-term currency perspective. So I think their overseas expansion will definitely be a necessity for them to actually build up their whole business.
And meanwhile, let's look at oil and the gas market, right? Because the G7 price cap on Russian oil prices has actually sparked a reprisal from Moscow, driving gas prices up. So what risk mitigating options does Europe have in the face of escalating energy prices, and considering that winter is just around the corner?
Honestly, I don't think there's any other mitigating factor. Because you see, the gas market is not as flexible as oil, right? No, it can actually shift the barrel purchases. The logistic infrastructure aspect of gas supply is not as straightforward as oil. So it's not something you can actually shift overnight. You know, I'm not buying from Russia, or Russia's not giving me, I can switch my purchases to other countries as flexible as that. So I think it is a very, very difficult situation for Europe as overall.
What about oil prices, though? This morning when I'm looking at Bloomberg, Brent crude is just marginally down 0.2%, $95.55 a barrel. OPEC Plus announced that they'll be cutting production by 100,000 barrels per day. So where do you see oil prices going, though?
The interesting part of it is the surge in the oil price is never due to a supply issue, right? You know, Russia is still pumping oil. Saudi or OPEC Plus are still pumping oil. The reason for the last surge in oil is simply because of the sanction. So it is not a supply-driven shock. It is more of a sanction-driven shock. That's the reason why you look at oil price is stabilizing, simply because all the shock you're seeing now is due to sanction or a refusal to buy Russian oil. Mm. But market is very dynamic. US, Europe don't buy Russian oil. You have India that is buying Russian oil. You have Saudi Arabia that is buying Russian oil. Right. So that's actually putting the price of equilibrium perspective per se on that basis.
And can I just get your perspective on Europe particularly? Because with all these energy shocks, right, that are taking place with all of the Russian pipeline closure, and we see in Germany especially storage units going up, do you see any parts of the value chain, right, like FPSO, which could benefit from that?
I don't think so. I think this is... my take is... I don't think it's going to be prolonged. I think it's a matter of time before somebody call it quits or to a certain extent find a solution to actually mitigate this rising price. So all I foresee is this is not likely going to be a long-term thing because it is really hurting the Europeans significantly.
All right, Peter, thanks very much for speaking to us today. That was Peter Lim, Chief Research Officer at Trident Analytics, giving us his take on some of the trends that he sees moving markets in the days and weeks to come, touching on developments with regard to the Chinese economy and also the European energy crisis as well.
Yeah, I think this is a big concern, I think, especially with the discussion just now about OPEC reducing production. And the point that you say, right, if you say now Brent crude is just touching below 100, this is not something we expected. Well, where we're heading into. But this is also an issue about weakening demand going forward.
There's demand destruction clearly happening.
All right, 9:19 in the morning. We're taking a quick break. And when we come back, we'll take a look at the outlook for fixed income. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.